Have you ever wondered why a cancer doctor might be involved in the treatment of mastocytosis? Well, today we talk to Dr. Tremblay, a hematologist-oncologist who explains bone marrow biopsies and the exciting new medications in development for mast cell disease. This is the seventh episode in our mast cell disease series made in partnership with the Allergy and Asthma Network. We thank Blueprint Medicines for sponsoring this episode.
You're listening to The Itch, a podcast exploring all things allergy, asthma, and immunology.
Welcome, Dr. Tremblay. We're very glad to have you on the podcast, and we would just like to hear a little bit about who you are and what is your field of expertise.
Great. So my name's Doug Tremblay, and I'm a hematologist and oncologist. And hematologists are blood doctors. So my focus is particularly on blood diseases and blood cancers. But I have a special focus on a group of diseases that includes systemic mastocytosis, which is what we're going to be talking about today. And so I see a variety of patients with different blood diseases, but a lot of patients who have mast cell diseases throughout the spectrum. So not just indolent systemic mastocytosis, but also as the more aggressive versions of the disease as well.
Great. Thank you. We're so excited to be talking to you today because I think a lot of patients do have questions because we've been talking about things like getting a bone marrow biopsy as a part of the workup potentially for patients that may have mast cell disease. And so can we just start there and just talk about when a patient comes to you with a possible diagnosis of mast cell disease, what are you looking for? What are you checking for? What kind of history taking are you doing? And then what kind of diagnostic tests are you doing?
Yeah, it's a great question. The patients come to see a hematologist from many different specialties. And I think it's really challenging from the patient perspective because you'll have certain symptoms that are suggestive of a mast cell disease, but you may see an allergist or you may see a dermatologist or you may see a rheumatologist or an immunologist. And then you might see a hematologist part of that too. And why our patients are generally referred to a hematologist like myself is that there is a concern that the mast cell disease could be related to something that is wrong with the blood. And so certain types of mast cell diseases are actually problems that originate and start in the bone marrow, the place where all your blood cells are made, and can be causing a lot of the symptoms that patients experience. So people like Dr. Gupta here or others will send patients to me to really try to answer that question. Is the mast cell disease that they're suspecting is causing a patient's symptom, is that something that is actually a blood disease? And those blood diseases are called systemic mastocytosis. So whenever a patient comes to see me, it's generally to evaluate for that. And we do many different types of tests to try to evaluate if there really is a mast cell disease there. And we're going to call these sort of mast cell disease clonal mast cell diseases. And what that really means is that there is something that's happening in the bone marrow that is creating too many mast cells in a problem that causes a lot of the symptoms of systemic mastocytosis. And frequently, that's because of a mutation. And a mutation is in the genes that kind of encode all of your blood cells, all of your cells in your body. There can be a little error and a mistake. And one specific mutation can really cause systemic mastocytosis in many patients. One of my first tasks in seeing a patient is say, hey, do you have this mutation? Because that tells me that, yes, you probably have systemic mastocytosis if you have this mutation. But there's other tests that we have to do, such as a bone marrow biopsy. And a bone marrow biopsy doesn't need to be performed in every patient for evaluation, but it is actually required to actually diagnose systemic mastocytosis. And that is something that a hematologist really has to do in order to say, yes, this is exactly what's causing your symptoms, and this is exactly what's causing your disease. And that really helps us determine how best to treat a patient too.
And can you just tell us what is a bone marrow biopsy specifically? What will the patient expect? Do they have to be off of work for several days? What does the procedure look like?
Yeah, so bone marrow biopsy, it sounds like this very barbaric procedure, but it's actually something very routine that is done just in the office and under local anesthesia in most of the cases. So we take a piece of the bone and some fluid out from a place in the hip. And if you go to your lower back where your hip bone is, there's a spot there that is really great to access the bone marrow because it's basically just skin and then bone. And so there's not other organs in the way. There's not many blood vessels around there. So what we do is you lay on your stomach or your side. We'll play some calming music. We'll sometimes give medications just to calm down for a little bit. And then we give a lot of local anesthesia lidocaine there to numb up not just the skin area, but the bone area. So that can be a little uncomfortable initially with a little bit of a pinching and burning sensation, but then the area should be nice and numbed up. And then we take a needle and go into the bone area. And at that point, patients may experience a little bit of pressure sensation. And then once we get into the bone marrow, we'll take some fluid out and we'll take a few deep breaths because you can feel a little bit increased intensity of pressure there. And then take a piece of the bone out and you might feel a little pinch. And the whole procedure lasts about 5-10 minutes. And we'll hold some pressure for a few minutes and then you'll lay on your back and about 10 to 15 minutes later, the patient can go home. There might be some soreness in the back area for a few days and that's completely normal. And there are some risks of it, but they're very minor. Risks like bleeding, infection, or damage to other tissues are very, very rare with the procedure. And almost all patients tolerate it extremely well without issues. If there is issues or you have an aversion to certain procedures, there are ways we can try to reduce some of the discomfort of that. It requires a little bit more coordination and things like conscious sedation. Almost all patients, and I've done thousands of bone marrow biopsies, have no problem with doing it with just some local anesthesia.
I definitely like had this vision of someone like sawing a bone, scraping it out. Like, you know what you see when you eat meat and you see like the bone and you're like scraping it out. That's actually really easy.
Yeah, it's not as scary as it seems. And for most patients with systemic mastocytosis, you have to do it once to say this is what it is and really figure out what's happening. But it's not something that we generally repeat in systemic mastocytosis. I encourage all patients to, especially if they're trying to get an understanding of what's causing their disease, to really think about doing it. But it's something that you should talk to your hematologist about.
What are you looking at when you look into the bone marrow?
Yeah, it's a great question, Courtney. There's many pieces of information that you get from a bone marrow biopsy that you just can't get from the blood that's taken from a vein in your arm. So when we do a bone marrow biopsy, we're looking for really under the microscope, we're looking for aggregates, which is little clumps and groups of mast cells. And those aggregates of mast cells will have very specific characteristics under the microscope and things that we will test for on the slides that will tell us, yes, this is actually systemic mastocytosis. But it's even more than that. It's not just looking under the microscope. Now in 2024, we have many tests that we send that we try to really characterize what is happening with someone's mast cell disease. So we test for that KIT mutation, that mutation I was discussing earlier. We can test for it, and we can test for it in a very small amount of it. So even if it's present in 1 in 100,000 cells, we can uncover that. And we'll test that directly from the blood and the bone marrow. And since the disease really starts in the bone marrow, the best place to actually look for that mutation is in the bone marrow itself. In addition, we look at other mutations and things that can help us determine what is happening with a patient's disease. And there is, not infrequently, you can uncover other blood problems that can occur at the same time as systemic mastocytosis. So all of that information can only really be gained from a bone marrow biopsy.
And just to go a couple steps back, can we just talk about what the bone marrow is?
Sure. So bone marrow is an organ in your body that is inside of all of your bones. The long bones in your legs, your arms, every bone has encased in it this organ that what it does is it makes blood cells. All of the blood cells that come into your body originate and start in the bone marrow and does a great job of making red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets so that you have energy, so you have white blood cells to fight infections and so that you have platelets to stop bleeding. And some of those white blood cells turn into mast cells later. Now, certain problems can happen in the bone marrow that can cause these different diseases. And there's many different blood diseases that we see as hematologists that are caused by problems that start in the bone marrow. But for mast cells, that's a specific sort of mutations and issues that occur that cause too many of these mast cells to grow out. And that really causes the disease.
For testing for the KIT mutation, you can actually do that by looking at the blood or by looking at the bone marrow.
You can do it from the blood. And that is a really great way to check for the KIT mutation, especially very sensitive, down to 0.03%. Very importantly, patients with systemic mastocytosis and this KIT mutation, sometimes we'll get tests where the test can only detect 5% of cells in the blood for the mutation. So if you have less than that, then the test will come back negative, but it will actually be positive. It's just the test can't detect it. So many centers, including ours, will have special tests where you can detect it down to 0.03% of the cells will have it. And that's really important because most patients with indolent systemic mastocytosis will have a very small amount of the KIT mutation, less than 1%. So it's really important to get the right test for the KIT mutation, because if you get one that doesn't have that level of sensitivity, isn't able to detect that small amount of it, it may be negative, but it will actually be a false negative test. But it's also, in some cases, a good idea to check that KIT mutation in the actual bone marrow. So if you check in the blood, it's a good way to start. But the bone marrow fluid, since that's where the disease really starts from and that's where the disease is located, that's probably the best place to check for that mutation, is in the actual bone marrow. So if it's positive in the blood, it will be positive in the bone marrow. But there are rare cases where it's negative in the blood, and you really need to check the bone marrow to really make sure.
And is that something a patient can really request? Be like, I need this very specific test, just so that when they are talking to their doctor, they know they're getting the right one. Is that something that a patient should be pushing for?
Yeah, should be pushing for, and specifically using the words digital droplet PCR. That's the really sensitive one where you can detect small amounts of it. And for systemic mastocytosis, it's so important to have a very sensitive test where you can detect small amounts of it, because these mutations can be present in very small amounts in patients. And so in order to really say someone is negative for the mutation and doesn't have that mutation, you really need that digital droplet PCR test.
Super. Thank you. We'll write that down in our show notes as well.
Thanks, Doug. And so we're actually going to shift a little bit, and I wanted to talk to you about the research that you're doing, because I know that there is a lot of research now being done on different therapies that may help people with mast cell disease. So can you talk a little bit about your research and what you're looking at?
Great. So the treatment for mast cell diseases traditionally has been medications like antihistamines and other drugs that really do a job that is basically just trying to prevent some of the effects of the mast cells overacting to reduce the symptoms of it. So patients who have systemic mastocytosis will be on multiple medications prescribed by myself or the allergist or dermatologist to try to control some of those symptoms. But they're kind of a band-aid over the wound, and they don't really attack what's really happening with systemic mastocytosis, which it's really a disease that starts in the bone marrow. So the best way to really treat it is to give medications that can actually prevent some of the problems that are happening in the bone marrow, kind of really attacking the disease at its source. So as I mentioned before, there's this mutation that's found in almost all patients with systemic mastocytosis, this KIT mutation, specifically a specific KIT mutation called D816V. That causes some problems in the bone marrow that cause too many mast cells to grow out and cause the problems that patients experience. So through a lot of excellent research that has been done, there's been development of drugs that really shut down that whole process. And these drugs are called KIT inhibitors. So KIT is the mutation that is overactive. You can think about it as a car engine that is kind of just always on going and foots on the pedal gas. And these KIT inhibitors, what they really do is kind of apply some brakes to that process. And in doing so, that can prevent the mast cells from growing out as much. By virtue of doing that, really reduce the symptoms. So there's been a few different KIT inhibitors in development. Earlier versions of these KIT inhibitors did a good job at inhibiting this KIT mutation, but it also did a lot of other things in the body, which whenever that happens with the medication, it can cause a lot of side effects. So there's a medication called Mitostorin, for instance, that has been available for a number of years, and it does a good job at inhibiting this KIT and preventing some of these symptoms, but it also can cause a lot of other symptoms like diarrhea and issues that can make it so that it's hard to tolerate. So more recently, there's been development of really more specific ones that are more targeted. So instead of trying to open a door with a hammer, it's more of opening a door with a key that fits exactly that KIT mutation. And this has led to the development of a drug, avapritinib. And avapritinib is a drug that is used in several different mast cell disorders and mast cell diseases, especially more advanced ones. But in indolent systemic mastocytosis, which is the most common version and the one we're talking about, this medication has been really fantastic at controlling the symptoms of indolent systemic mastocytosis without as many side effects. What we're now really focused on is now we have a specific KIT inhibitor, but it actually does a few other things and can cause some side effects by targeting other features. And because of that, you really can't increase the dose too much of it. If you increase the dose too much, you can get more side effects. So now there's even new next generation medications that are even more selective, more specific for that KIT mutation that you can thereby increase the dose more and get more effect from it. And it also has some effects in the body that allow it to kind of localize in places that you would want instead of going to places that you don't want. So these new medications that we're really testing now are thought to be safer because of some of their pharmacologic properties and can give you higher doses of the medications of the KIT inhibition to really attack the symptoms. So there's two medications that are in development, and one that we're focused on is bezuclastinib, which is a new selective KIT inhibitor that has really shown really wonderful effects in terms of symptom improvement in early studies. And there's another medication, elenestinib, which is also in development, which is also really still trying to get even more selective and more specific for that mutation that's causing all the symptoms in systemic mastocytosis.
So just to clarify, when we're talking about these different medications, we're really just talking about any mast cell disease that is caused by the KIT mutation. So in general, you were saying systemic mastocytosis. And from our former episode, I just want to remind people what indolent mastocytosis is. And correct me if I'm wrong and I'm completely misremembering, but that's kind of like one of the question mark ones where you're not 100% sure what's causing it, but you know that there is a KIT mutation, but that's about all you know, right?
Yeah, and there is more aggressive systemic mastocytosis. So systemic mastocytosis is kind of an umbrella term that tells you that there's some problem with the mast cells that's starting in the bone marrow. Now, indolent systemic mastocytosis, as it suggests, is where the amount of the mast cells is not as high and the issues that it's causing, although really can be experienced by patients as being extremely severe, they're not as aggressive in terms of immediate life-threatening issues. So indolent systemic mastocytosis, the life expectancy is probably the same as patients who don't have indolent systemic mastocytosis. But these mast cells can grow out and cause even more problems. And that's when you get into these more advanced systemic mastocytosis, where you can have organ involvement, like your spleen or liver can grow, or it can cause issues with your GI tract, causing massive diarrhea issues that cause weight loss, and it can be really a big issue. Or it can even grow out into a really aggressive form of leukemia too. So those are all more advanced versions of the disease, but thankfully the majority of patients have indolent systemic mastocytosis where you don't have those advanced features that can be more life-threatening.
Thank you. And can we go into maybe a little bit more detail? So you mentioned too the bezuclastinib. That one is different from avapritinib in that they're both targeting the KIT receptor, but just one is more specific than the other.
Yeah. So whenever you're designing drugs for different diseases and you have a target, some drugs that are able to attack that target, but they also have off-target effects. But there is more drugs, and as we've developed better and better pharmacology for this disease, now we can be more selective that say, not just the KIT we want to focus on, but that mutated KIT, that mutation that you have. So that can really say, we're going to attack this KIT receptor, but also specifically try to really focus in on the mutant version of it. And why that's important is that it allows you to attack the problem, which is this KIT mutation, but without affecting other types of receptors that can cause a lot of side effects. And because of that, there's an attempt to try to design drugs that are even more selective and even more specific, laser focused on that KIT mutation so that there's less of those side effects, especially because this is a disease where patients are going to be on these medications for long periods of time to control their symptoms. Sometimes when you look at drugs that we evaluate in oncology, we have a tolerance for certain side effects and say, oh, it's okay if you have some minor diarrhea, that's not a problem. But if you have nausea, vomiting, that's minor, but you have it every day, that can be a huge burden for patients. And that's not something you really would want to give someone where you're trying to make them feel better. The goal of all of these drugs, Pyle and Courtney, is to really make people feel better. So if you're not accomplishing that because you have side effects, then that can limit your ability to do that. I have many patients who I've treated with avapritinib, and some patients feel better on it, but other patients say some things are better, but some things are worse. And I like treating patients with systemic mastocytosis because it's not just the doctor telling you what to do. It's really the patient's telling the doctor, this is what I'm feeling, this is what I think. And there's a lot of power that comes from that relationship. I really encourage all of patients with systemic mastocytosis to feel empowered to tell their doctors, this is what I feel, this is what's working, this is what's not working. And now with all of these new drugs and these clinical trials we're running, we're having more tools that we can try to improve the lives with patients with systemic mastocytosis. But it's really important for patients to also feel the ability to tell their doctors, this is what I'm feeling and this is how I think we can do better. And now just as a hematologist, we just have better ways to attack those symptoms and make patients feel better.
I see that all of these medications end in TINIB. So I'm assuming that that means something special. And Doug, can you tell us exactly what that means when we see a generic medication with this ending?
Generally, when you look at drug names, generic drug names that end in inib, that means an inhibitor. So inib, inhibitor. And that generally means small molecule inhibitors, which basically means a chemical that can do a very specific job in inhibiting a very specific part of the receptor in your cells. And so whenever you have things like avapritinib or bezuclastinib or elenestinib, these drugs we're talking about, all of these are pills that you take that are absorbed into the body. And then that little active part of the drug, this microscopic chemical, goes and inhibits and prevents this activation of some pathway in your body. That's in contrast to NABs or AB, which is antibodies. And that also helps explain that some of the antibodies are injections or infusions, and that's how those drugs are delivered to the body. These inhibs are typically pills, which is helpful for patients too, because it's not as much of a burden with injections or infusions where you have to do all these things. It's a pill that you can take.
Great. And I know patients always ask, so this is not a cure. This is a treatment that when you're on it, you're getting the benefit from it. But when you're off of it, you're not getting the benefit from it. So there is no technical cure for mast cell disease. This is just another way of inhibiting what's going wrong in your body, thereby hopefully making your symptoms better and making your overall functioning in life better. But unfortunately, it doesn't actually cure the disease.
Yeah, excellent point. The issue is that, you know, they're actually is a cure for mast cell disease, but it's not something that we would ever recommend for patients, and that's a bone marrow transplant. The disease originates from the bone marrow, and so we have a procedure that we do that giving very high-dose chemotherapy to basically just wipe out the bone marrow and then give someone else's bone marrow to the patient that then sets up shop in the bone marrow and then also finds and kills all the bad cells. Now, that sounds great as a cure for a disease, but unfortunately, it's an extremely dangerous procedure. And anywhere between 10 to 20% of patients will actually die during the procedure. The side effects of the medications that you need to be on are very serious. It's, you know, 6 weeks in the hospital and many complications afterwards. So you're trading something that we can manage with the symptoms with something that we don't think really compromises your life expectancy for this atomic bomb of a procedure, and that's nothing we would ever recommend for indolent systemic mastocytosis. Now, for more advanced versions of the disease, like aggressive systemic mastocytosis or mast cell leukemia, then the risks of the procedure may be actually less than the risks of the disease itself. But in medicine, we always have to balance the risks and the benefits. And for bone marrow transplants, that is something that the risks are way worse than the benefits you would get, because we can, in general, control the disease from a life expectancy perspective with just medications. These medications are aimed at really trying to control the disease, but they don't eliminate those mast cells permanently, we don't think. Now, there are diseases where these pills do actually, in some patients, cure the disease. So in the future, it may be possible to try to treat these diseases aggressively with an inhibitor that then basically does such a good job at shutting everything down and killing those bad cells that they don't come back again. But that's not right now. And that's probably not in the near future.
I just have a question about the immune system. So when you are taking these inhibitors, does it do anything to your overall immune system? And I know that because my sister is a critical care surgeon, and every time she sees someone on some sort of immune system altering medication, she just knows it's going to be a very complicated case. So I was just curious as to how the immune system respond to this. Does it make you, in general, weaker?
What a great question, Courtney. So the current thought is that this probably does not significantly impact your immune system and your response to infections. This mutation and this gene really is very specific for certain ability for blood cells to turn into mast cells. And so inhibiting that shouldn't impact other parts of your immune system, like B cells and T cells and other things that are important for your immune response. With that said, these are relatively new medications. This is a rare disease. And when that combination of factors come together, where you have new medications in a rare disease, there's not hundreds of thousands of patients who've been treated with these medications. So we don't really fully know the effects of this, but I would say based on clinical trials where patients are watched very, very, very carefully, there hasn't been a suggestion that this significantly impacts your immune system or your immune response or your ability to fight infections. In fact, whenever I see patients who are on these medications, I encourage them to get vaccines for common illnesses, and I don't tell them to have protective precautions outside of what's kind of recommended nowadays, because I don't think that that is necessary. But I think in the next, when we have this conversation, and I hope we have this conversation again in 5 to 10 years, maybe we'll have more information on that after we have more experience.
How far along are we with those other two medications, as far as are they projected to be approved next year, this year, or are the studies still pretty early on?
Yeah, the studies are still pretty early on, and we're currently enrolling the bezuclastinib trial at my center at Mount Sinai, and we're still learning how effective and what the benefit is over standard therapies. Recently in December was our big annual meeting where some of the data was presented from the early experience of these medications, and they do look extremely effective in reducing the amount of the symptoms that patients experience, but also, really importantly, reducing the amount of the mast cells and the burden of the mast cells, which we think is really important. So in contrast to medications like antihistamines and chromium salts and montelukast, those medications don't really reduce the amount of mast cells. They just kind of blunt the effects of the mast cells. But these KIT inhibitors really reduce the amount of the mast cells. And that is shown when we look at things like tryptase in the blood, or when we look under the bone marrow biopsy at the amount of mast cells, that really reduces significantly. And even that amount of that mutation that we talked about can really shoot downwards after starting these medications. So the early data from these newer drugs show that they're very effective at this, but more data is needed to really say, is this so effective that it should be approved by the regulatory authorities, the FDA? And how much better is this than avapritinib? So I think a lot of this is still developing, and I hope to have updates in the future about when these may come to market and be approved. But right now, they're only available at clinical trials.
And could you talk a little bit about what kind of a patient you're looking for your clinical trials? Because we do have a lot of patients, obviously, that are listening that are interested in finding alternatives for this disease that they're suffering from. This might be a good opportunity to just put it out there for patients to get an understanding of maybe a clinical trial that they may be able to get involved in, and how would they even go about doing that?
First of all, I think it's important for all patients with systemic mastocytosis to be seen by a hematologist, and a hematologist who has some expertise and experience in mast cell diseases. I think that's really important because it's a complicated disease. It's a rare disease. And it's something that I think that some hematologists who don't see it very often may kind of brush off or not really manage in the best way. So I think it's important for all SM patients to be seen by a hematologist who really is focused on this. In terms of clinical trials, I think that if you're a systemic mastocytosis patient and you still have symptoms that are burdensome to you, and that is something that is still happening while you're on antihistamine medications, antileukotrienes like montelukast, or other medications, if you're on those medications and you're still having symptoms that are burdensome from you, it's possible to be eligible for this clinical trial of bezuclastinib. Clinical trials are very careful in terms of which patients can come onto the study. And it's not just to be kicking patients out just to be mean or something. It's really because we want to try to isolate the type of patients who we're going to benefit the most from this medication, and in a way where we can study it safely too. So patients have to have systemic mastocytosis to go into the trial. Unfortunately, mast cell activation syndrome and other mast cell diseases aren't eligible right now. So they have to have systemic mastocytosis. For this clinical trial, which I think is really important, is that it actually allows some patients who have been treated with avapritinib to actually go into the clinical trial too. So if you're someone who's on avapritinib or tried avapritinib and it didn't really work with you, then this is something that may be an option for you too. But truthfully, it requires a careful evaluation by not only myself, but our entire research team to really say, this is someone who's eligible for this trial. But I encourage anyone to, if they have questions, just reach out, and I'm happy to field any questions from patients. I love talking to patients directly, so you can reach out to me and I'm happy to discuss.
I know the links to those studies to register, so I will make sure that we have them in the show notes.
Great. Yeah, no problem. You're welcome to put my email on there too. I get a lot of emails from patients, and I really don't mind responding and doing that if that's something that would be helpful for you.
That's amazing. We definitely add your email to the show notes if anybody has further questions and just wants to get access to a very smart hematologist. That would be amazing.
Yeah, so I'm totally happy to see anyone anytime. So just email me.
Awesome. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Great. Thanks. So nice meeting both of you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Remember that all information you hear today is for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for the consultation, diagnosis, and/or medical treatment of a qualified physician or healthcare provider. And also, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. And if you have a second, help spread the word by rating our podcast and sharing with your friends and family who might also be interested in learning more about allergies, asthma, and immunology. You can always stay up to date by checking out our Instagram, The Itch Podcast, where you can leave questions you are itching to know, or check out our website, which is www.itchpodcast.com, which contains more information about the subjects we covered in today's episode and every episode. Until next time, have a fabulous week.